Just inbound, and that's it. There's a new NBA champion, and it's a team from Toronto, Canada. We the North are now we the champions, the Raptors, the 2019 NBA champs.
Man, it is worth remembering, if you're waking up and all of this still feels like a dream, that nothing that happened during this Toronto Raptors season would have been possible if their general manager was afraid to piss off basically everyone almost a year ago. Over the past week, as it became possible, and then probable, and then became reality, I thought a lot about a conversation I had with Michael Grange of Sportsnet the day after Kawhi Leonard became a Raptor. I thought about how many times we both said if, about how uncertain everyone was, how betrayed a lot of fans and even players in the organization felt by the move. I thought about how many ways this thing could have gone badly, badly wrong from that day forward. And I thought that even then, in that moment, and Grange noted it, that downside didn't matter, not compared to what was possible.
24 seasons in the making. The Toronto Raptors are headed to their first NBA Finals.
I'm fascinated by people who are able to make unpopular decisions without blinking, and I'm overjoyed when they're proven right. Especially when that vindication is so dramatic and so spectacular that it sends a country into the streets. So today, in honor of the Toronto Raptors NBA champions, we dug out our conversation with Michael Grange for you, just so you could feel how far we've come and to remind you that, no, last night wasn't a dream, but when it began, it was. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and I'm extremely happy to present our first ever look back. We caught Sportsnet's NBA insider, Michael Grange, right after the Toronto Raptors announced they had traded DeMar DeRozan for Kawhi Leonard last July 18th.
You spent a lot of time around DeMar. What's one memory for you that will stick around as sort of the who he is, I guess?
Oh, well, there's lots of them. One, when he got drafted here in 2009, I can't really think of a player I didn't fully appreciate fast enough. You know, I really, he was such a quiet guy as a rookie. I had real questions about his game and his ability to become an elite player for, he had some shortcomings he had to work on and work through. And so I didn't really take him all that seriously as a guy who would be a franchise cornerstone. And then fast forward 5-6 years later, he's turned himself into an all-star. He's on the verge of being an all-NBA player. He's gone from being virtually silent to being one of the most engaging, thoughtful, courageous interview subjects a journalist could have. A nice guy, a humble guy, never kind of goes out of his way to make people feel less when they're around him, which is kind of an unusual quality sometimes. And, you know, and you saw him grow up. You know, you saw his kids come and greet him in the locker room after games. You saw him kind of become vocal on issues outside of basketball at times. You saw him, I think, kind of almost in a landmark way, talk about his own struggles with depression and anxiety and things like that just this past season. And, you know, but I, more than anything, I guess I remember speaking to him going back almost 5 years now, certainly four. He was just kind of emerging into this all-star level player, and him unabashedly, unreservedly, almost unprompted, talking about how he wanted Toronto to be where he played his entire career and how that was almost as important to him as winning a championship or maybe anything else. He just really wanted to be associated with a franchise. That franchise was Toronto, and that passion, that unwavering commitment was that he proved. Like, he didn't just talk it and then forget about it. Like, he lived it. You know, that was always really striking to me.
So what was the trade, and more importantly, how did the deal go down?
Well, the trade was DeMar DeRozan for Kawhi Leonard. In addition, the Raptors acquire a player named Danny Green, who's a really good, serviceable role player that any team would be happy to have. And the Raptors also gave up Jakob Poeltl. Masai Ujiri, the Raptors president, is in Kenya doing work with his charitable foundation, including hanging around with Barack Obama So he's keeping the right company these days. And my understanding is DeMar DeRozan was told in a phone call that would have been kind of late at night in Kenya and early hours in L.A. or late in L.A. time, so let's say sometime after midnight. And DeMar DeRozan followed up with an Instagram post kind of basically alluding to the lack of loyalty that, you know, that you get promised but don't necessarily get in return in the NBA. You know, and then it took a few hours for it all to kind of get confirmed and be made official. But that was all sewn up by about noon.
What did DeMar DeRozan mean to Toronto or to NBA fans in Canada?
Well, I think he was a symbol. He represented a shift in how this franchise could think about itself. I think how NBA fans in the city and sports fans in the city and country could think about the Raptors. And he did it certainly with how he played. You know, he'll go down as he's already the leading all-time scorer in NBA and Raptors history and at the top of most every other significant record, list of records. But, you know, I think what really makes DeRozan stand out and why he'll go down in franchise history is he committed to being a Raptor. He committed to being a Torontonian. He committed to trying to make what was a fairly unappealing franchise by NBA standards for most of his 25-plus years to making it an appealing place. And you know, he was heartfelt. He was honest. He was consistent. And I think that, combined with how he played, made him a very, very special player in the history of the Toronto Raptors franchise.
How many times in basketball and in other sports as well, have we seen a Canadian team acquire a star player and immediately then ask, do they even want to be here?
Well, I mean, it's kind of a, you know, a theme, you know, and I think you need to put it in the context of the NBA versus, say, the NHL. You know, Canada is the home of hockey, and there's a vast population of hockey players from Canada, obviously, and, you know, and baseball players. Maybe Toronto's not home, but sure enough, they get to play here in the summer. So it feels like everywhere else in North America, maybe even with better weather. But in, you know, the NBA, I think it's always, I've always said it has kind of two, it suffers from two, I wouldn't say inferiority complexes, but two kind of layers where, you know, they've fought for relevance over time. And one is Toronto as a market being the only market outside the United States and trying to get the proper recognition within the league when things are going bad and all that, or going good, I should say, and all that kind of thing. And that's always been something the Raptors have had to fight against, and hence you have that whole We the North kind of marketing slogan, which really caught on because it really expressed that maybe frustration Canadian basketball fans felt. But even within the market in Canada and Toronto, there's always been almost a second fiddle status to hockey and to the Leafs or whoever it might be. And so, you know, I think we've seen that evolve considerably in the last 25 years. We've seen it evolve at a rapid pace in the last 5 years. And, you know, and so I think overall that history, there's been moments where players haven't want to come here, or they've had to be paid premiums to come here, or, you know, the Raptors franchise history is littered with elite players that chose to leave at their first opportunity. And there's been some scar tissue among the fan base as a result. And so for DeMar DeRozan to come over and heal a lot of that just by his presence and his commitment, you know, I think that the franchise is in a very different place within the NBA than it was not very long ago even. And certainly within the Canadian and the Toronto sporting complex, you know, than we had maybe grown used to over the years, certainly in the early days.
I think a lot of that is owed to DeMar DeRozan, as you say. And the question is, what do the Raptors owe him in return for bringing this franchise so far away from the bad old days?
Well, they owe him a thank you. And, you know, they certainly, you know, he's been paid handsomely, I think, over time. And DeMar DeRozan is still very young in his career. I would be surprised if he doesn't play another 5, 8, 9 years. When that career is done, I think there should be a recognition of DeRozan as sort of maybe the quintessential Raptor, the person who helped pivot the franchise from kind of a curiosity to a mainstay, both domestically and throughout the league. You know, but the real question, Jordan, is given the price that was paid to make this trade, which is basically you have an athlete 100% committed to playing in a place that not many athletes have shown that level of commitment towards, and then turn around and, you know, quite cold-heartedly send him away in a high-risk trade. The real question is going to be, at what point will DeRozan feel, that he can get over whatever pain I'm very sure he's feeling right now, and betrayal and all those kind of emotions, to accept any kind of long-term recognition. There's nothing owed technically, but you know, you can make the case that at some point the Raptors could owe DeMar DeRozan an apology.
DeMar built his family here. His kids were friends with Kyle Lowry's kids. And when you change a dynamic like that, what can happen to the guys who aren't DeMar DeRozan who will be here next year?
That's a huge question. And I think I guess the people who remain behind can rally around the fact that their organization believes in them and will do anything to increase their chances of winning. To the extent you were ever able to operate with a certain degree of loyalty and something beyond what's written on contracts, you know, I think that's going to be a harder sell. and I think from the point of view of the Raptors fan base, the next time a player kind of decides that, you know, this situation isn't for them and they're going to leave and pursue what's situation is best for them, I think the people who really got eagerly behind this trade in a hurry will have to kind of check themselves if they want to claim any players are disloyal or anything else going forward. So it's become this is a transaction. And not to be naive, I know the NBA is all full of transactions. Pro sports is by nature transactional. But, when it gets this laid out bare the way it has with this deal, that's the atmosphere you're now operating in.
So basketball question then. Why is Kawhi Leonard worth all these risks?
He is, the epitome of what is valued in the NBA the way it's played now, in that he's an elite perimeter shooter, a highly efficient scorer. In other words, he can get really, literally, if you were to divide all the points he scores versus all the times he touches the ball, because of his three-point shooting and his general overall ability, he generates more points every time he touches the ball than most players in the NBA. That alone makes him exceptional. What makes him uber elite, literally among the top five, or certainly I think the top five players in the game when he's fully healthy, is he can have the same impact defensively over a wide range of players. In other words, he can attach himself to the very best players in the game, your LeBron James, Kevin Durant's, Steph Curry's, and he can ruin what they're trying to do offensively.
So if he's that elite and there's a handful of players at best that can match him, why didn't he cost a king's ransom?
That's the multi-million-dollar question. Kawhi Leonard was acquired on draft night by the San Antonio Spurs in 2011. He was raised within their system. He helped them win a championship in 2014. You know, he was viewed until very recently as the model citizen in the NBA's model franchise. But what broke down, we don't really know, because Kawhi Leonard's kind of an inscrutable character, does very little media, he barely communicates his position at the best of times. But at some stage, he injured. He suffered a thigh injury, a quadricep tendon injury, and at some point in time lost faith or trust in the Spurs' view of it medically, and that set off a rift that they were never able to repair, and it got so bad that his own teammates, really highly respected players, began to question him, and I think at that point, the rift became unsolvable.
We talked about how the last few years the Raptors have really built up their fan base and even challenged hockey at times as the big sport in the winter here. What happens to the relationship between the Raptors and their fans if this deal doesn't work out, if Kawhi doesn't play for Toronto?
It's a great question. I think he will play. it would be extraordinary if he didn't play. If he's ruled healthy and he didn't play, he'd be foregoing, a $21 million payday this year and all the rest of it. So, I don't know if that's a realistic concern.
But what if he's bad?
What if he's bad? What if he's hurt? What if he's gimpy? What if he plays half a season? What if the whole thing doesn't work? Those are great questions, and I think that's something that we won't know until it happens, but it goes back to the Raptors kind of, trying to grab the brass ring and literally at almost any cost. If it works, I think the payoffs are significant, and fans being fans, DeMar DeRozan will be warmly embraced every time he comes through Toronto, but he won't be missed. Sad as that is to say, and kind of a comment on maybe where we are sometimes as a culture. If it doesn't work, I think there'll be a lot of people, both people who never wanted to see DeRozan go in the first place and people who are kind of excited in the prospect of Kawhi Leonard coming, who will very quickly, as fans do, turn around and start pointing fingers and, you know, forget the logic of why the deal was made in the first place.
The one word that all the discussion around this trade and the reaction to it seems to hinge on is loyalty. So what role does loyalty play in sports right now, and what role should it play?
What role does it play? Not much. I think teams that do really, really well are able to inspire a sense of loyalty or a sense of something other than just the kind of hard, cold, transactional nature of the industry. I think it's hard to be completely mercenary and reach all your potential in a team sport. But I think when teams and players and franchises look at making a choice between a chance to win and give yourself a better chance of winning and, you know, exercising some of those softer qualities like loyalty, the chance to win usually trumps. Does it always work? No. I think it backfires often, but I think that's where this trade is a really, you know, it'll never be forgotten in the Toronto sports landscape for exactly that reason. You've got a player who was loyal, who was determined to be loyal here, a very unusual quality, was sincere in it, had opportunities to kind of look elsewhere and never did. And you've got a franchise that in the Raptors that often traded on that, but when the opportunity came to upgrade, they went for it. And so it's kind of a lesson in how harsh some of this stuff can be.
So, Michael, are you going to miss DeMar?
I will miss him, 100%. You know, he wasn't the perfect basketball player. He had quirks in his game that would drive you nuts the more you watched him. But he also was a guy who would deliver in big moments, who never shied away from the responsibility of being a franchise player, and who was legitimately well-liked, fun, friendly guy. And, you know, that combination of qualities is pretty unusual. And to see it kind of grow and develop before your eyes was a privilege. And, yeah, I am going to miss DeMar DeRozan. He was a wonderful person for me to deal with, and I'm not alone in saying that. And I think the Raptors fan base will miss him too.
Thanks, Michael. I really appreciate it.
No problem, Jordan. My pleasure.
That was the big story. The Kawhi Leonard trade revisited with Michael Grange of Sportsnet. That's probably all the basketball we've got for you, at least until Kawhi resigns. You can find us at thebigstorypodcast.ca or on Twitter at thebigstoryfpn. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. We'll talk Monday.